Hey there, folks, and welcome to episode 61 of Comic Timing. We had a little scheduling mishap with our plan, so instead we rounded up the guys from Cryptographic, Brian and Damien, to talk about horror comics and horror and just everything else in general. So make sure you stick around for that. I know this is weird, but we had episode 62 part 1, so now we're giving you 61, and hopefully 62 part 2, the New York Comic Con wrap-up, will be out within the next couple of days, if not the week. And then after that, we have our 2-year anniversary special, so stay tuned for that. But also stay tuned at the end of the show. There's some New York Comic Con talk. This was recorded before the New York Comic Con, so Brian has given everybody a lowdown of what to expect and some cool things to look out for. So give that a shot and stay tuned at the end for some fun little bloopers, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.
Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 61 of Comic Timing. Now, I'm sure you guys were probably expecting to hear an interview as we were pimping it like crazy, but, the Radical Publishing guys, something must have happened because they weren't there when they said they were going to be. No big deal, though. We managed to scrounge up a panel, and first off, joined by the usual co-host, not co-host, co-host, as opposed to the unusual co-host, not co-host, co-host, that's Brent Cassina.
I was wondering what the unusual one would be.
I'm not even sure myself. We're still trying to figure that out, but what's going on, Brent?
Not much.
And we're also joined by the Cryptographic crew, who I literally just, like, wrestled into this call. I'm like, hey, what's going on? What's up? Yeah, record. So right now, we got both Lobo Brian and Damien Smith, Lord Shaper, on the call at the same time for the first time on Comic Timing, both of them on the same call. What's going on, boys?
Yeah, we got Shanghai.
all because my computer went down.
yeah, exactly. Your computer went down, Lobo called, and then you came back on, and I'm like, yeah, why not? Let's get him in here, too. So as opposed to recording the intro to your show, we'll record about an hour and a half of mine. Makes sense.
Well, as long as the wife lets me.
right. Unless the repairman comes, and then we're minus one Australian.
I'll just go on mute for a while, I think, and then I'll come back.
Well, it's okay. That's how Brent works all the time.
Sorry, I'm still reading this thing here.
Yeah, well, we got a couple of free comics that we might talk about later on, but we'll save that for the other episode. Anyway, before we get going here, for anybody who's not familiar with Cryptographic, and I'm sure that out of the people who listen to Comic Timing, considering that you know, Damien does do the Rogues Gallery with us, and he mentions it every other time, there's probably like two people. But for those two people, what's Cryptographic all about, boys?
I'll let you go with that, Brian. I did it on Geek Syndicate the other day. I'm fine.
Science fiction, dark fantasy, and horror in and out of comics. Basically, it's genre fiction in comics, film, novels, television, you know, wherever. But, every genre except for superheroes. Not because there's necessarily anything wrong with superheroes, just because there's already 150 comics podcasts covering superheroes, so we're the other podcast.
And you're listening to one of them right now. Well, it's good to be different, considering that, I started this show, and I was like, hey, yeah, we could be a roundtable discussion podcast. There aren't that many of those, right? Right?
Up. Yeah, who sits around talking about comics?
I know, right? I mean, there aren't that many of us, so why the hell not? But I'm glad that you guys are different because you managed to cover everything that I don't. But I guess the first question I'll ask both of you is, how did you first get into the world of you know, dark horror, fantasy, sci-fi, so on and so forth? What was your intro drug, I guess? And we'll start with Lobo.
Well, most of my cousins are anywhere from 4 to like 15 years older than me. So they found great delight in introducing me to the Hammer horror films and thriller and chiller theater when I was, I don't know, 6 years old, 7 years old, and still young enough to be traumatized by such things. Mm-hmm. And over time, I guess I just got immune, and all of a sudden I wasn't scared anymore, and then they got scared.
Because you scared them.
Yeah, I think when I stopped getting scared at a young age that they all took that as a bad sign, but it was too late. You know, they built Frankenstein's monster, and you couldn't put him back in the box.
I was about to say the same thing.
Well, then, say your own variation of it, Damien.
Well, basically with me, I sort of, as far back as I remember, I remember learning about ESP and stuff like that when I was in school. So, you know, this is back in primary school and stuff like that, so I would have been probably about the same age as what Brian was. And then I took great pleasure in actually scaring the crap out of my sister. So it sort of went on from there.
See,
you know, I'd sit there with all the movies. Like, I remember, like, The Gate and stuff like that when I was in high school, and I would sit there in a dark room, and I'd go, oh, I'm cold, and I'll go grab a blanket, but I'd have, like, a plastic skull in there, and I'd sit it next to me and then pretend that there's nothing next to me just to scare her.
See, as an only child, it was kind of difficult to scare myself. I mean, I'd stare in the mirror for hours and go boo, but didn't really work.
You got to say Candyman.
Or Candle Jack three times.
Bloody Mary.
I was about to say Lobo.
Lobo. Ah!
Yeah, then you see a giant hook on a chain coming at you.
Jeez. Brent, what was the first scary movie you saw as a kid?
Oh, God, I don't even know.
What was the first one you remember seeing then?
Shit. Hold on. Give me a minute.
All right.
Mine was Christine.
What is that for the people out there? I've never actually heard of that one.
Christine, based on the Stephen King novel about the car that goes around killing people.
Okay.
We used to get, like, during school holidays and stuff, because both my parents work, we had what they called the YMCA type thing, where you would go along there and they would take care of you. You know, it's like a holiday daycare type thing for kids. And every Friday you'll go off to see a movie or something, and they'd ring up to find out what movies were kids specific, and someone at the theatre said, oh, this movie called Christine. And it must have been having a joke, so suddenly all these kids were taken along to see Christine, ranging from probably 4 years up until, I think, about 10.
Ooh, that's painful.
It was quite amusing. The fact, like, they gave the older kids an option, so I was one of the older ones, so I had an option, did I go or did I stay? And so I stayed and watched the movie while half the other people actually had to go.
Now, see, back when I was working for a camp, they used to force us to sit down and watch the movies with the kids, and I think the scariest movie I ever had to sit through was that movie where Bruce Willis met his younger self.
Kid?
Yeah, there we go, The Kid. Yeah, that was one scary-ass movie. Not because it was a scary movie, just because it was just terribly acted.
I don't remember. I think the first scary movie I ever saw, like, or actively went out and saw in theaters was The Ring. I can't remember anything like what I've seen on TV, because I know I didn't watch that many. So it wasn't until, like, I saw The Ring that I started kind of, like, watching them. And I saw the Rob Zombie Halloween. I've seen all of his other movies now. Mm-hmm.
Which first Halloween did you watch?
I watched it in the theater, so I haven't seen the unrated DVD yet.
Okay.
But,
I'm remembering, actually. Well, if you consider this a horror movie, I guess it depends on your opinion. But I remember seeing Ghostbusters 2 when I was 5 years old and getting so scared that I had to force my grandfather to take me out of the theater.
No, that's not a horror movie.
Ah, damn it. See, because if you take that out of it, then my first one is like years later when, you know, it wasn't even really that scary to me. But, like, I mean, I saw, like, Friday the 13th on TV and stuff like that and, you know, like, from there. But that's the first movie that was so, like, freaking scary to me that I had to walk out. But, again, I was five. I didn't know any better.
Yeah. Another traumatizing event in my childhood. I was staying at my cousin's house, and her and her friend were teenagers, and I was, I don't know how young, very young, too young to be going into this movie. And they took me to see the first Friday, the first Nightmare on Elm Street, mm-hmm. in the theater.
Ooh.
And I don't even know, was that 1981 or 82 around? Somewhere around there, which would make me around 10 or 11 years old. I still love that movie. But, yeah, I might have been a little too young. I might have been a little traumatized, but I apparently got over it.
Well, Nightmare on Elm Street was 1984, according to IMDb.
No way.
Yep. 1984, the year I was born.
Not me.
All right, well, then that has
I got 11 years after me.
Then that has to be something else.
Yeah, because...
I mean, I
remember going and seeing the Nightmare on Elm Street in theater. That was fun. Especially the later ones where you just sat there and laughed, you know, when the girl was forced to eat herself to death and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I remember... I always remember the last scene where the mother gets pulled through the door.
Yeah, that's...
Like the window on the door.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's never a good way to travel.
Yeah, that's damn funny.
I was less than a year old when Nightmare on Elm Street came out, so even if my parents did take me to see it, which I'm sure they didn't, I would certainly not have remembered it. Or maybe I do subconsciously.
Maybe you wanted to.
I remember before that I saw Poltergeist in the theaters. Let's see. That was 1982. All right, that's when I was 11. So that was pretty scary when I was 11. It's not so scary anymore, but when I was 11, it was a pretty good one. Nightmare on Elm Street, now that I'm thinking about it, probably... It was probably scary, but probably not as bad as Poltergeist. I think the trauma came from Poltergeist. Damn Steven Spielberg. Tobe Hooper.
Poltergeist is a damn good movie. I mean, scary movie or not, that's just an incredibly well-done movie. I mean, I saw it on I think, VHS, like, you know, years after it came out. But, I mean, that to this day is still one of my favorite Spielbergs.
Oh, that is a crazy movie when in the theaters when you have like the tree reaching in and grabbing the kid, or you have all the dead Indians coming up out of the ground, the skeletons and everything. that was bananas. I'll put it up on a big screen.
What is Spielberg's obsession with dead Indians?
I don't know.
He was one in a past life.
He was a dead Indian in a past life. Yeah. Great, it all makes sense to me now, Damien. Thanks.
Yeah, now you see why I have such a hard time editing the show.
And now you see why I don't really edit that much of my show. Because if I did, then fun things like that would come out. Brent, you ever see Poltergeist? Or is that one of the ones that you still get to see?
No, I did see it recently. It was really good.
Yeah. It's got that nice 80s feel to it, you know?
Okay, I want to ask a question. In Rob Zombie's House of a Thousand Corpses, what the fuck was underneath the underground there? I know that was like Dr. Satan, but goddamn, watching that movie, that was just like, where the hell did this come from? It scared the crap out of me, too, because it's so freaky looking.
Yeah.
Anybody have an answer for me?
I think that's when the acid finally kicked in.
It was.
That's what it felt like. Yeah, you know, he was doing Grindhouse before Tarantino and Rodriguez did Grindhouse, basically. He kind of, you know, House of a Thousand Corpses, it's a little non-linear. it's more of like a carnival ride, you know, than a movie. I mean, there's not like a really real forward momentum to the plot. It's really kind of like people stumbling through one traumatic experience after another, much like my childhood.
And that's how you became the person you are today.
Yeah, yeah.
He's going to get a doctorate so he can be called Dr. Death.
Yeah, that's why when I walk down the street, parents take their kids on the other side, walk on the other side.
So... From your, what was your transition from horror movies to horror comics?
Probably around the time of the Mutant Massacre, because I remember I remember, like, I went through Secret Wars, Secret Wars 2, and buying all those stupid crossovers and everything. And then when the Mutant Massacre came on, I was like, you know what? Screw all this crap. And, like, it's so funny because so many people actually jumped on the X-Books at that point, and that's where I jumped off. And from there, I started getting into a lot of the superhero stuff. I'm trying to think if it was, I guess Calibur was around back then, Innovation, you know, a lot of the small press stuff, and a lot of black and white independent stuff. Like I said, I mean, Calibur put out a ton of really good stuff. Of course, I'm blanking right now, but that's where
Magus, like Saint Germain, but they were all a bit later. They were around towards the end of Calibur, around like late from '95 onwards.
Right. I guess maybe some of the Rebel Studios stuff. I guess Faust probably started around then. Which it was where I got the name for my boa constrictor, Faust, from the comic book. Yes, I had a pet boa constrictor for years.
So did I. You're not the only one. I inherited it from cousins of mine. They named it, not me, sadly enough, because they named it Chris Hiss, and I had to deal with that as long as he was here.
Oh, you going to tell me it actually came when you called it?
That's what I'm saying. You really could have renamed it. And
it was probably. It was my dad who was sticking with it. It's like, hey, they named them that, so let's just stick with it. I'm like, okay, whatever you say, father. Then it turned out it was a girl.
Well, Chris goes both ways,
I guess,
so to speak.
He's awesome, nice enough.
Whoa. That's a different show for a different time, people.
Don't be telling jokes. Come on.
So this was this 80s or 90s here with the horror comics?
You know, I gotta say, probably was early to mid 90s, because I know I was still getting some Batman stuff. Like, I was getting Legend of the Dark Knight pretty much from the. I have the first 100 issues, probably. I like that for the most part. I remember, again, being set off when they crossed it over with the Nightfall storyline, and I like specifically didn't buy those issues because I wasn't buying any of the other Batman books. I was only buying Legends of the Dark Knight.
Right.
Let's see. You know, I liked Starman, the Spectre, and that kind of stuff. But little by little, I started getting into more of the Vertigo stuff. I guess Swamp Thing, Sandman, Shades of Changing Man.
It was? Yeah.
Yeah, Spectre was much later. Same with Starman. Mm-hmm. Those were like mid-90s. But I'm trying to think, because like I said, I think I transitioned more into just like the less superhero kind of books. Mm-hmm. And probably even got away from superhero comics for a while, or comics in general for a while, rather. I think probably from around the time when I left high school, well, I graduated from high school in 89, so I probably more or less got away from comics for a couple of years, and then when I came back to it, I wasn't trying to get back into like the soap opera stuff, so I was like, oh, what else you got? And, like, that's when you started to see some of the Vertigo stuff, and the Image guys were starting up. I got all the those early Spawn issues, and let's see, what else was good back then? Practically anything from McFarlane Studios I was getting. Mm-hmm. He was doing all kinds of crazy stuff. He did some Houdini comic, and it was just like whatever. I was like, okay, cool, McFarlane, just get it, whatever.
Yeah.
But, that was the thing back then. It's like people just getting anything with Jim Lee or Rob Liefeld, right. or Stephen Platt.
Ooh, Rob Liefeld, Oh, boy. But, Damien, what about you? When did you first get into the world of horror comics?
I know it's going to be bad to admit this, but I was first consciously went looking for them after seeing The Lost Boys.
Whoa.
So basically, you know, we had the Frog Brothers there, and they're going, you have to read this comic, which they had some kill all vampires or something like that. And I thought, oh, there's stuff like that out there. I'll go and have a look. Yeah, otherwise, I was at the time, I think I was getting stuff like The Haunted Tank and G.I. Combat and, you know, Transformers that were out at the time and God knows what else. But then I thought, oh, let's go and have a look. And I can't remember. Actually, Brian, do you have those ones I sent over to you close at hand or not? The stuff from Chris?
No, they're not.
Because
like,
I can't remember what date it was. Like, I found, like, this one. What was it called? The Vault of Horror or stuff like that. And I found, like, the EC reprints that they were bringing out. Was it once a year or once a month or something? They were doing, like, one book's reprints. So I found a few of those. And from there, it sort of branched on to going to the 90s where I came across Ghost Rider and then Morbius. And, you know, I'm actually going back now trying to find Darkhold and stuff like that to get all of the Midnight Sun stuff. And then it went to Vertigo, so, you know, your Hellblazers, your Sandman, stuff like that, to the point where I was actually getting nearly the entire Vertigo run.
Yeah, Vertigo was very horror there for a while. I mean, it still is today, but almost every single thing it was putting out back then was horror.
Yeah, Vertigo, I don't know, Vertigo got really weird. I was definitely a big Vertigo fan in the 90s, and you remind me, I was getting those gemstone reprints of the EC books. They were actually coming out, I want to say, I don't think they were quarterly, but it is possible. It's something like that, because they were doing actually all of the EC titles in order, but it might have been quarterly, because they were only doing like maybe two or three comics a month, or maybe, I don't think it was bi-monthly. I don't know. Anyway, so I was definitely getting all the EC stuff. So I was getting Tales from the Crypt, Vault of Horror, Haunt of Fear, Crime Suspense Stories, Shock Suspense Stories, Two-Fisted Tales.
Stuff like that. Like, that goes into it to a degree. I was getting all the Crow stuff sort of just after the movie hit. So.
Yeah, I never really got into the Crow. And actually, after the movie came out, and I pretty much liked the movie, and a friend of mine loaned me the trade paperback, and I was like, yeah, but I like the movie.
The movie was totally different to the trade paperback.
Yeah, and I didn't love the trade paperback, to be honest.
Right.
But
well, I've never actually read the Crow stuff myself. Again, I'm very much a newbie when it comes to horror comics, which is why I have you guys on here, because I think I go as far as sadly enough, like the just like really like the Army of Darkness guys, you know, stuff like that, really, because I read a little bit of The Walking Dead. Wasn't really my thing. I don't know. I might try it again at some point. I do have those two volumes sitting on my shelf. I read about half of the first volume and just wasn't really my cup of tea, but who knows, maybe
I've read the first
again.
Three trades for that, and I'm enjoyed to haven't picked them up since, so I'm just going to find time to get actually and money to go and get it, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, The Walking Dead is a fun book. Again, I mean, it's almost a little soap opera-ish, but it's kind of like Dark Shadows with zombies.
I actually had the Dark Shadow comic that came out from Innovation too. I think of all those tie-ins as well, like the Anne Rice ones and all that stuff. So
yeah, see, I didn't get that stuff. I got, it wasn't Innovation, it was Now Comics. They were putting out Twilight Zone, and they were putting out the Ray Bradbury Chronicles. That was early 90s. That was like around 90, 91, 92, around there. I was getting that stuff. I'm trying to think further back. I mean, yeah, 80s. I
even had like the Beauty and the Beast stuff as well that they came out with.
Yeah, see,
based
I
on
really.
The TV show.
Yeah, that was more Innovation. I'm trying to remember what Innovation books I used to get, because I definitely wasn't getting any of that stuff.
And the Necroscope stuff, all the Brian Lumley stuff, of course. So.
Yeah, I should have got the Necroscope stuff. You know what, the covers looked cool. The covers looked cool, but I didn't know how the stories would hold up.
Hey, Brent, what was your first non-superhero comic book? that you've read since you started collecting?
I think Revelations, the Paul Jenkins mini about the Vatican. But I did read the first trade of Walking Dead, and I think Why and Preacher.
Okay. And what did you think of Walking Dead?
I've only read the first volume, but I liked it. Just I don't have the funds to go get the other 10 or that are out or something yet. But it's one of those things that I want to follow up on because I just recently reread the first volume and still liked it. So I'm going to go out and get it eventually.
Yeah. I guess maybe it's an acquired taste or something because – I don't know. Maybe I just wasn't paying enough attention to it while I was reading it or something.
Well, I really like the Tony Moore art, but I heard that it changes in the second volume to some other dude, so I don't know what that's like or
anything like that. Yeah, Charles Adlard actually did a pretty smooth transition. In the – I guess it was probably early 90s. He did the Mars Attacks comics from Topps. And let's see, Topps was doing.
They did the X-Files one as well. That's one I got. That's the only one I was getting from Topps at the time.
Right. Maybe it was more mid '90s with Topps Comics. They did Zorro, I think, and they did. Did they do Lone Ranger and Tonto? The Joe Lansdale, Tim Truman book. I think so. Those are good books. The Vertigo Jonah Hex books by Lansdale and Truman, those books are excellent. And you'll probably never see them get collected. Maybe the first one. I think Two Gun Mojo was the first one. Mm-hmm. That might be in a trade. But the second one, we talked about that in an early episode of the podcast. Jonathan and Edgar Winter, the Winter Brothers, sued DC Comics and Lansdale and Truman because they had a pair of these albino worm rustlers or whatever that were half worm, half albino man or whatever. And Jonathan and Edgar Winter are albino guitar players and brothers. So they had the Autumn Brothers in the Jonah Hex book that were these albino half worm people with long kind of stringy hair, and I guess the Winter Brothers didn't appreciate the comparison, so they tried to shut it down. But I mean, they got all four books out first, but you'll probably never see it traded.
Okay, so they just never resolve things whatsoever? I mean, there's no possibility of it happening?
It eventually got settled. They eventually, I think they settled out of court because I don't ever remember reading the settlement. But it definitely went to court, and yeah, I'm guessing DC just bought them off. They're just look, how much money will it take just to go away?
Which we might be seeing very soon with a certain Superman.
I don't know. I'm really kind of – I'd be very surprised if they fought for 10 years for half the rights to Action Number One just to go roll over and sell it for a couple of bucks.
You'd be surprised what $100 million will do to somebody.
Yeah, but how much can they get in actually just leasing the rights to the characters out and keeping them – keeping the characters' rights themselves, but actually just lease them out to DC and take royalties from then on.
That
would be the smart thing to do.
I mean, it would be the smart thing to do.
You know it's a known moneymaker. There's no doubt about it. So what they would have to do.
You're going to continue getting income on that until the day you die, pretty much.
Yeah. And if you're going to turn around and say, no, you can't use them, well, there's no point. I've just got that whole episode of The Simpsons where the guy who really created Itchy came back. that's what this is reminding me of.
Yeah, a little bit, and that's a good episode also. What horror book would you recommend to somebody who, say for instance, whose name might be Brent or Ian, that might be getting into or wanting to get into horror comics, but hasn't really gotten into them before? What book would you really recommend to them? And again, the names might be Ian or Brent, or it could be Bob or Joe or Susie. We don't really know.
It's like anything. You really have to go to the taste of the person. It's like when people say, you know, recommend a comic for my girlfriend or my wife or whatever. It's like, well, what is she like otherwise? Mm-hmm. Like, you can't just say, oh, Sandman and Fables or something, because what if she doesn't like that kind of stuff? What if she likes, you know, crime fiction or something? What if she likes mysteries? What if she likes anything other than, like, you know, fairies and elves or whatever? You know, then, you know, you'd give them, like, probably the wrong book. So, you know, I totally reject any kind of blanket recommendations like that, because it totally depends on the person. You know, like, some people like vampire fiction, some people like zombie fiction, some people hate zombie fiction, some people like slashers, some people hate slashers, or whatever. You know, it really, really depends on the taste of the person. I'd say hack slash is kind of a, I don't want to say lighthearted, but it's not maybe as hardcore a horror book, but the idea behind it is that Cassie, Hack, and Vlad, they go around chasing supernatural slashers like a Jason or a Michael Myers or something like that, because Cassie Hack's mother was a supernatural slasher. I think she was called like the lunch lady or something, something like that. Because she actually was like the lunch lady in a cafeteria in like a school or something.
So it's a literal name.
And yeah, but that was like, that's what her name became in the media. That's how they referred to her. Mm-hmm. And so Cassie Hack actually went, like, the first slasher that she killed was her mother. And I think, or maybe Vlad saved her. I don't know. It's been a while since I read that story. But so now they travel around, kind of like Bill Bixby and the Incredible Hulk, and they go like from town to town, you know, searching out supernatural slashers and killing them and stuff. But it's
what I would really say about that actually is if someone likes Dexter, the TV series, they'll probably like that, but it's just got a supernatural twist to it.
Well, then you just probably sold me on that, because Dexter is one of my favorite shows on television.
See, I don't get the Dexter vibe off of it though, because
I'm just the one, you know, looking at for comparisons, and that's the sort of comparison I would sort of say to it.
Right,
but it's not
serial killer killing serial killers.
Right, but it's not. It doesn't have the deadpan, dry delivery that kind of lends humor to Dexter. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have the police procedural aspects of Dexter. So that's kind of almost a perfect example of why, like, you can't really make those kind of blanket recommendations. I mean, I get where you're going with a serial killer killing serial killers, mm-hmm. but that's kind of where it begins and ends. This is like you know, the Batman and Robin of serial killers, but like almost, I don't know. I don't want to say, you see, it's, I don't want to really suggest that there's too much humor in it. It's not, mm-hmm. it's like maybe on the level of Hatchet or Behind the Mask, The Legend of Leslie Vernon.
Okay.
If you've seen either of those and enjoyed them, you'd probably like Hack Slash.
It's lighthearted, well, at least slightly lighthearted in the humor aspect, but still serious.
Oh, it's lighthearted, but it's not overly jokey. It's not, right. You know, it's not like Scary Movie 4 or something, you know. It's,
so more Angel than Buffy.
I suppose. I didn't watch any of that stuff either. Right. But, you know, I mean, by the time Buffy came out, I wasn't interested in teenage girls anymore.
Well, I mean, come on. My favorite part about that show is that Angel was played by a 27-year-old when he first started on the show, and by the time the show was over, he certainly didn't look like anywhere near like he did the first time around. So, you know, I mean,
Xander was still about the same age, you know?
Yeah, yeah, I know. I mean, Xander even today still looks like a young kid. I mean, same thing with Allison Hannigan. She hasn't really aged that much over the years either. But David Boreanaz, he has freaking aged. Oh my God. So it's like when he was playing a character that's supposed to not be able to age, kind of showed. Kind of really showed.
And, you know, people who listen to Cryptographic know that we're fans of Dr. Sleepless and Gravel from Warren Ellis over at Avatar. Mm-hmm. Dr. Sleepless would probably appeal to kind of a fan of Lovecraftian fiction. Mm-hmm. It kind of has those kind of overtones. Whereas Gravel is almost like a 180. I really feel like William Gravel's character is kind of what Warren Ellis would have liked to have done if he didn't feel compelled to leave Hellblazer.
Okay.
Yeah, it's like Hellblazer, but he's military trained.
Well, he's a combat magician for the for the English SAS. So he has, like you said, the military training, and so he's, you know, kind of a tough guy. He's not like a con man like John Constantine, but he still is very adept at magic, more so than we've seen in Constantine for a long time.
Is it Constantine or Constantine?
Tyne?
Okay. All right, because I've heard Constantine so many times. That's why I'm wondering. You're the first person I've heard who said Constantine.
Is right, Damien?
I usually say Constantine as well. So.
Oh, okay.
Just depends what part of England you come from.
I guess so. All right,
you know,
cool.
Newcastle. It's two different things.
Right, right. You say tomato, I say tomato.
Yeah. We've been down this path before. Also, you've got to put in Hellblazer there. That's something that I would always recommend. You know, it's probably the longest running horror book currently out. So,
right.
Yeah, and with Andy Diggle writing it, you can't go wrong.
Yeah, the last Hellblazer trade that came out, Joyride, was awesome. Kind of rehashing what we were talking about on the last Cryptographic episode. The new Hellblazer trade, Joyride, I had stopped picking up Hellblazer when Denise Mina came on the book. Nothing against her or her writing. I'm really not familiar with her writing, but just the stories and the solicitations just didn't seem like the type of stories that I wanted to read John Constantine in. So I wound up dropping the book, and then I didn't pick it up, but I kept hearing good things about Andy Diggle's run. So when the trade was solicited, I ordered it, and like I said, I mean, I blasted through the thing probably one or two sittings, and it's really, really well done. It's definitely bringing what did I say last night? It's bringing Constantine back to where he almost kind of where he started
where he
from,
yeah,
but without him having to make a deal with the devil, despite being a magician.
So Hellblazer's got a little bit of everything from the sounds of things. It's like something that could probably bring in somebody who might not even like horror that much, but just likes appealing characters.
Well, you definitely have to like horror.
Okay.
I mean, there's definitely demons and
rituals
and there's no way around it. It is undeniably a horror book. There's, you know, demons and rituals and, you know, sacrifices and, you know, I mean, like everything that you can imagine in a horror book. I mean, it starts out he's tied to a pole with the water rising around him in the river, and he does an invocation, and all these other people who died the same way kind of come up from under the ground, under the water, and mayhem ensues.
So I know you mentioned that you don't like making like blanket statements about, you know, things that people in general might enjoy, but what if I were to give you like two or three genres that I'm into, would you be able to give me like maybe like one pick or something like that? And I we'll do the same with Brent also, but
sure.
Like I'm into Like, I love the anime Helsing. If you've ever seen the anime Helsing, the vampire genre, that sort of thing. So I like I do enjoy the vampire genre. I like a good zombie book, but not a zombie book that takes itself too seriously. Like, if it's all, you know, brains, blah, 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 mindless zombies, that's not really what I'm into. I'm more into zombies with personalities, if that makes any much of a sense there. And I guess I could also say I like monster hunters. You know, the type of guys who will go out there and perhaps go on, like, long journeys or adventures or something like that and try and attract maybe, like, mythical monsters or monsters in general down. So there are three things that I give you there. Give me a book about life.
You've got to have
living corpse,
don't we? Yeah, exactly.
The living corpse. I mean, you practically described the living corpse.
Nice.
The living corpse, the whole premise behind the living corpse is, you know, Ken and Buzz, the creators, they like zombies and zombie fiction and zombie movies or whatever, but they wanted to tell a story from the zombie's point of view. They wanted to give the zombie personality so much that they made him the main character in the book. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the main premise of the book is there's, like, you know, the zombie uprising that you normally see. But just as he's about to, like, take a bite out of this little kid, he, like, flashes back to when he was alive and he was playing with his kids and everything. And he's like, no. And he starts fighting off the other zombies trying to protect the kid. And so with the realization, I guess, he becomes a monster hunter. And now he fights supernatural creatures, you know, defending, you know, humanity. But it's definitely a lighthearted book. I mean, it's drawn in kind of like an animated style, mm-hmm. But it's very... It can still get a little bloody, but it's more kind of like itchy and scratchy kind of bloody.
Right.
Itchy and scratchy kind of violence. And almost that level of humor. I mean, you know, a little bit of like cracking jokes, and the book definitely doesn't take itself too seriously. So, I mean, just from what you were saying, I mean, you practically were describing the living corpse. I mean, even if I wasn't, you know, friends with Ken and Buzz, mm-hmm. I mean, that's the first book that came to my mind.
Right. And any vampire ones you'd be able to recommend?
At the moment, there's not really many. Probably the closest one would be Last Blood.
Last Blood is
it's different. It's the zombie apocalypse, but the vampires are taking care of the humans because they don't want to run out of their food supply.
Hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's more of a book than a, you know, lighthearted book. So.
I wouldn't necessarily suggest that that Last Blood is a particularly lighthearted book.
Well, Helsing isn't very lighthearted either, so that's why I'm just curious, because sometimes I just like a good old fashioned vampire romp, if you know what I mean.
Sure. I was going to say, if you want something a little more lighthearted, yeah, you got to go with Succulina Vampire Temp from Moonstone.
What a name, man. Holy crap.
Oh, my God. This shit was fucking hysterical. It's basically, she is the head torturer in hell, and but she's bored. And everybody in hell, like, wants to be tortured by her because she's the best, and they all, I guess, kind of, like, get off on it or whatever. But she's bored because this is all she does all day long is, like, torture people in hell. So she decides to come to Earth to give her life meaning, and so she comes to Earth as an office temp. And she gets into all these various situations in an office because, you know, things come up and she tries to come up with some kind of, you know, supernatural way to fix it. And of course it backfires because she misinterprets things or whatever.
Right.
And it's really, really well done. The two guys that did the book, unfortunately I don't remember their names because I don't have the book handy right now, but they both work for Bongo Comics on the Simpsons books. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's where they're coming from in their background and everything. So if you're a fan of, say, like the Simpsons Treehouse of Horror episodes or the comics or anything, it's the same guys doing Succulina Vampire Temp.
Sweet. And here I am as a current office temp thinking to myself, what would life be like if a vampire showed up at my office?
You'd be out of a job for one.
But you'd die with a smile on your face.
Brent, what sort of horror genres are you usually into? Maybe they'd be able to give you a good recommendation.
I've read all of the Hellboy volumes 1-7. Haven't read the new one with Duncan Fregredo or whatever. But look, I'm going to get the trade when if that comes out, or if it's out.
I'm getting all that stuff in trade myself, so.
But I really enjoyed those. I thought those were, like, a lot of fun. I don't know if they're really, like, horror more than – I mean, I guess they're horror, but they're not really scary, you know, because Hellboy's kind of funny about it. They're just kind of creepy at sometimes. And right. I don't know. I'm just loving, like, Mignola's art, basically. But I love the way he tells a story, too, because it's got, like, a little bit of setup, a little joke, and then some more setup, and then, like, a payoff. And then it goes back and just kind of goes back around again.
Right. It's more almost like a monster adventure as much as it is a horror comic. Let's see. What's in that kind of vein?
Goblin Chronicles, but that's not really – that's an all-ages.
Yeah, Goblin Chronicles might almost be a little too lighthearted. That's more like, you know, if you wanted an updated version of almost like the Smurfs, but
– Well, it starts off pretty dark from what I've read of it so far. So.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of kidding. I mean, it's not quite the Smurfs, but it's almost the Smurfs in comparison to Hellboy. Let's see. What do I got here? I'm trying to flip through what I got on top of the pile here. There you go. Well, Devil's Due is doing Halloween Night Dance. Let's see. So if you like the Michael Myers stuff, you can pick that up. What were we talking about last night?
Ash versus Freddy versus Jason.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know.
I like that they just came out with the, Army of Darkness versus Xena. Why not?
Yeah.
And yeah, you know,
the solicitation for the cover of the second issue, and it actually has Ash versus whoever he played in Xena.
Oh, sweet. Nice. So he's actually facing Autolycus, King of Thieves.
Yes.
Nice.
I passed. Lock and Key is an interesting story. Again, when we were talking about this last night with Bob, you might like Lock and Key if you're into, would you call it a quiet horror, Damien? It's essentially like a ghost story, I guess, so far, or haunted house story.
Yeah. Well, from what you've told me.
right. Oh, yeah, that's right. You hadn't read
it. I'm not reading it.
Me and Bob. The author of Lock and Key is Joe Hill. Joe Hill is the son of Stephen and Tabitha King, who both write novels, not just Steve King. And Joe Hill's actually made a reputation for himself with a short story collection, whose name still escapes me from last night, and his Bram Stoker award-winning novel, Heart-Shaped Box. And to my knowledge, this is his first comic work, Lock and Key, from IDW. And it's interesting. It's deals with this family. I don't want to give too much of the story away, but there's a crisis, and they wind up moving into their ancestral home, which is known as Key House. And turns out that when you open the doors in Key House, various things happen. You know, that you wouldn't normally expect when you open a door. So, it's, like I said, it's maybe a little bit of a quiet horror, at least, you know, we were talking about this last night. It seems like it starts out a little slow, but it starts to pick up in the second issue, and everybody online loves Joe Hill. I haven't actually read his prose, but I'm looking forward to the rest of the Lock and Key miniseries, and I'll probably start picking up his books after that. You got Ben Templesmith, who did the 30 Days of Night books. Speaking of vampires, there's no shortage of 30 Days of Night trade paperbacks from IDW.
Yeah, but, only these days, a lot of them have that annoying "based on a major motion picture," you know, or "now a major motion picture" sticker on them, which I hate.
Yeah, well, what are you gonna do? Got to sell books, right?
Yeah.
But Ben Templesmith,
the hair dryer and peeling pretty slowly gets those off.
Ben Templesmith branched off and did his own book, Wormwood Gentleman Corpse, which is essentially this corpse that's possessed by this worm guy, and he sits in a bar and saves the universe from extra-dimensional creatures that try and get through the bar. And... there's more to it than that, but that's a lot of it. That would probably appeal to Hellboy fans because there's some humor, there's a lot of monsters. I would say Wormwood Gentleman Corpse is probably a good fit for Hellboy fans. And I just picked up Dead Space number 1, which is Anthony Johnston and Ben Templesmith. Anthony Johnston from Wasteland. And I know a lot of people were down on it because it's supposed to be the prequel to a video game, but I'm just kind of partial to anything Ben Templesmith does, so I'll probably pick it up anyway. I haven't had a chance to read it yet, and I'm flipping through it, and it looks like the cover looks horror, but the interior looks science fiction, so I'm guessing it's probably going to be science horror along the lines.
I think it's along lots of Event Horizon.
I was thinking
sort of things,
one or two Aliens films, but maybe. Waiting to see where that goes. Like I said, I just got the first issue. I didn't even get a chance to read it yet, but it's got a good pedigree.
Well, that's usually a good sign for a book. And, hey, even prequels for video games can sometimes be good.
Sure. I don't know. Did anyone pick up that Hellgate London from Dark Horse?
No, I didn't. But, the one thing that I was thinking of with video games is... But, I picked up a couple of the Silent Hill books. And, I mean, they're along the lines of the... Silent Hill games, and they do have some of the same themes, but, you know, different characters and different situations. And those actually usually turn out to be pretty decent. I mean, I know IDW are the guys who put that out usually, and it's been pretty damn good up until now.
Let's see. We have Bad Planet is Steve Niles, and I forget who's doing the art on that. That's a pretty neat book. Again, it's kind of a little bit alien contact, aliens first contact with Earth type of thing, mixed with some monster aspects, I guess.
Right.
They did a really cool 3D comic. I want to say it was probably the third issue. The 3D worked really, really well. It was actually almost bordering on impressed that it worked as well as it did.
That's the first time I've actually heard of a 3D comic working.
Yeah, they did a really good job with it. It's I don't know if they used a different format or if it's just getting better or what.
Well, maybe they used the same sort of format they used in Beowulf, because Beowulf 3D was pretty damn impressive.
Yeah. Let's see. We have... Crawl Space XXX Zombies with the zombies on the porno set.
Oh, that's a great book.
Yeah, so if you're looking for a lighthearted zombie book, you can look for Crawlspace XXX Zombies from Image, which that's Rick Remender, and I forget who else is on that. That book, like I said, it's zombies on a porno set in like the 70s.
Is that like the zombie strippers movie that's coming out?
No. This is totally unrelated, but maybe not totally.
To have two projects like that coming out at the same time, what the hell is this world coming to?
Yeah, zombie strippers, I'm not going to see that. Robert Englund and Jenna Jameson, I don't think so.
Oh, I'm there.
Depends who's the stripper, if it's Robert Englund or Jenna Jameson.
I don't know whether it's like a real movie or if it's like one of that pirates porno that they tried to like chop up into like an actual R-rated movie and put it into Blockbuster. I'm not sure.
I'm going to go with Robert Englund.
If you're going to go down the line of the pornos, what about the World of Warcraft one that's just gone on to its second season? It's the online one called Horde now, but it was originally called, what was it, World of Warcraft.
Oh, yeah. Holy crap. Yeah, I remember seeing that for the first time and thinking to myself, you know, that is something I'm going to have to watch at least one episode of. Never did.
You get one of those things that Ian gets from his hentai dealer with like a Nightwing.
You're just going to bring this up once in episode, aren't you, Brent?
You never should have told me.
Yeah.
Well, since we're talking about tentacle porn,
when you're getting married, Brent. When you're getting married, huh?
Yeah, never.
When she gets him drunk enough.
I like the old school, like Yuratsu Kidoji.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
You would have
actually
seen that, wouldn't you? Oh, you need to go see that. You need to see that.
Explain.
You haven't seen hentai until you've seen Yuratsu Kidoji.
Oh, boy. Tentacles all over the place, huh?
I remember the Sailor Moon hentai that went around 10 years ago.
Oh.
You should have seen what she was doing with the Star Scepter.
I don't want to know. I'm sure it'll accidentally get to me thanks to Scans Daily eventually.
Another kind of a, I guess you'd say a lighthearted horror book from Dark Horse would be the Cal McDonald Criminal Macabre books. Mm-hmm. Think of along the lines of An American John Constantine, only more drunk and less functional.
That would happen when you're more drunk.
Well, it's not entirely due to him being drunk, because it's not even when he's sober, he might be a little dysfunctional. But he it's somewhere in between John Constantine and Hellboy, I would say. He deals with all these monsters that are coming at him, and he just like blows them away with a shotgun or something. You know, he's not really like a magician like John Constantine, even Tyne. Yeah.
Teen Tyne.
Yeah, exactly.
Like John.
Yeah, he's not really like a magician like John Constantine, but he knows how to deal with supernatural threats. Mm-hmm. I guess you would say.
Right.
So that's an interesting book.
I doubt it's nearly as out there, but it sounds a little along the lines of how they take care of things in The Goon. You know, they shoot people once or twice and then end the story.
Yeah, very much. The Goon is probably, if not the template, it's definitely along the lines of Criminal Macabre, the Cal McDonald books, The Living Corpse. Actually, a lot of the monster books that are being solicited lately, especially through Image, you're seeing a lot of these monster comedies, which personally myself, I'm not necessarily a fan of. Like, I don't mind a book like the Cal McDonald books or The Living Corpse, where there are monster books where they have some humor in them, but I think there's one, I don't know if it's called Screamland or Urban Monsters or something like that, one of them where basically it's like Dracula, Frankenstein's monster, and the werewolf are like out of work actors, and they're like hitchhiking to Hollywood because they're trying to get they're trying to put together, like, I don't know, a reunion picture or something because they're, like, hard up for cash. I'm sitting here, I'm like...
That one's Screamland. I saw it the other day in the shop, and I just thought, yep, that's that one we're going to avoid the plague.
That sounds like one that I read two issues of, and I'm not sure if the third issue actually ever came out, and if it did, I'm going to have to track it down. But I think it was called Strange Detective Tales or something like that, where I believe... what's the name of Dracula's Igor? Like Dracula.
Renfield.
Yeah, Renfield. Renfield and I forget who else are detectives in this almost like fables like community of like monsters, like the old school monsters, and a lot of them ended up in Hollywood to become movie stars, and now they're the detectives in this place trying to make sure that things stay on the straight and narrow. And I loved the first two issues. Problem is, I don't think the third one ever actually came out. And if it did, I'm going to have to track it down because this was like a year ago. I actually mentioned it on the one episode of Around Comics I was on. That was actually my pick for Top of the Stack. That tells you how long ago I read it because that was like 2 years ago.
Let's see. We have The Fury Agent books, also by Rick Remender over at Dark Horse. Those are really science fiction... But he fights a lot of aliens, which are basically just another type of monster anyway. Again, another lighthearted take. If you're a fan of Hellboy and you want more of like a pulp science fiction version of Hellboy, less supernatural, more science fiction, I would say Fear Agent's probably a good pick. Gene Simmons' House of Horror is... from IDW is trying to do like an old school Tales from the Crypt style anthology horror where he's essentially like the Crypt Keeper, where he introduces the story so you have like the bookend segments with Gene Simmons introducing the book and closing out the book, and you have usually three or four stories in between different creators. And those are a little more expensive, though. I don't know. I think they're maybe like $8 or $9, but
yeah,
they're like 64 pages. So, I mean, it's not like you're paying that much for a book. You're paying that much for pretty much like three books worth of content. So it winds up about even, but you're not going to be able to buy like three other books if you buy it.
The first one was $9.99.
Yeah. What else is good? New World Order from Image is like a conspiracy type of book. So if you're interested in like the conspiracy theory type of stuff, there's New World Order, and it's a fictional take on like real conspiracy theories, and he speaks with real. People who are like investigating like the New World Order and the people like working behind the scenes, like the Skull and Bone Society or whatever, the Illuminati and that type of stuff. And he uses information that he's researched from real conspiracy theories and that New World Order type of stuff for the basis for the book. So it's kind of a fictional take on, whatever, as much truth as you attribute to that conspiracy type of stuff.
Right. Out of curiosity, what do you guys think of the whole, more mainstream companies trying to do horror these days? I mean, obviously, I know what you think of the whole Marvel Zombies thing, as you made it perfectly clear on your show on multiple occasions, but... It seems to me that more of the better known companies like DC, Marvel, Wildstorm are getting more and more into the genre of horror these days. For one thing, do you think they're doing a decent job of it? And two, what do you think this is going to do for the overall, scene of horror books? I mean, do you think they're going to get more mainstream as they go on?
Well.
First off, I disagree right off the bat.
Okay.
Just based on the fact that, first off, I distinguish between monsters and horror. The Munsters is arguably a story about monsters, but it's obviously not a horror story by any stretch. I feel like I'm seeing a lot of monster books that are closer to the Munsters than they are, like, say, Nightmare on Elm Street or something. So that's like one issue that I'm having just with like a lot of books that are trying to, I don't know, it's like this horror comedy bandwagon that's sprouted up in the last couple of months or maybe even a little longer. But it's definitely not something that I'm particularly a fan of. I feel like if you're going to make a monster book, at least give it the pretense that you're trying to do something, scary or horrific with it. Another good example is Willow Creek from Zenoscope, who also publishes A Living Corpse. Willow Creek is like a Bigfoot book. It's very, very dark. The artist Josh Metters kind of uses an art style similar to what Ben Templesmith did on the early 30 Days of Night.
Mm-hmm.
Not so much now, where it's a lot more photoshopped and it's a lot, the colors are more vibrant. He uses a more muted palette and I think less Photoshop, like Templesmith did in the earlier books. And it's definitely a dark book, besides the color palette, just the tone of the book. These researchers go out looking for Bigfoot, and things don't really work out that well.
But when does it ever work out well when you're looking for Bigfoot?
Well, when you're doing a horror comedy instead of a horror book.
Right. Well, Damien, what are your thoughts of what I brought up? Am I off base or am I on target?
I don't know. Well, I think DC's always done a better quality horror-based book. Like, I know I'm only up to the second trade of Shadow Pact and stuff like that, but that sort of set into a horror scene. They've always been good with the Spectre, apart from the last series. So, and actually, even through where Hal Jordan was, the one before that was it was a horror book. They need to do more books like that. I think Marvel has really jumped ship, and they have totally destroyed most of their horror characters. Blade with a gun arm is just really bad.
I didn't even know he did
Ghost
have
Rider
one.
Seems to have
Whoa.
Been torn down, turned around. They took all the personality away from Morbius in the one issue of Blade that he was in, where he signed up with Stark or something or other, and that's it. He's doing nothing now. He doesn't have any personality yet. And I know I've ranted on quite a few actual podcasts about that. But, even when they did their... What was it? They did the Legion of Monsters, whatever, and that totally sucked. I don't know what's happening there. But, mainstream... Basically, I think we'll find that it's going to be people like the like your Hellboys and stuff like that. They're going to be the ones that are going to be really leading it as your mainstream type books that people are always going to know about.
So
From the Marvel Max line, they did two zombie miniseries featuring the Simon Garth from the old Tales of the Zombie Marvel magazines. Those are pretty good, and the mainstream is Marvel. They're Max titles, so they're not Marvel Universe, and they're, I guess, a little more adult. But those books are pretty good. Not really too much that's real exciting from DC or Marvel on the horror end for me.
Right.
I would say, I just want to see, give Morbius to Warren Ellis as the Max title or
Ooh.
Something.
Well, see, that would be good, but then he'll just be on it for 12 issues and then move on, which I'm not really – and this is a mini rant I'm going on here.
Sure.
I'm kind of not really liking the way Warren Ellis seems to be doing that these days. Like, he says that I think his exact words were he can only paint somebody else's house long enough. However, if it's his house, he'll paint it as many times as he can.
Sure.
And I really don't feel that way about Warren Ellis. My own personal taste with his is that he's a little less out there and a little less insane when he's doing other people's books, and I think it pays off. His Thunderbolts has been great. I enjoyed when he. Well, I'm sure he's going to do a great job at Astonishing X-Men, and the stuff he's been doing in the Ultimate Universe has been pretty damn good as well. And I don't see a reason for him to leave just for the sake of leaving. And that seems to be what he's doing with any like mainstream book that he's on these days.
But he's also stated that he doesn't like he's making enough money to live quite comfortably. Mm-hmm. And this is actually I'm not sure if it's CGS Forum or somewhere else, but he's making enough money on all the independent stuff that he's doing to live quite comfortably. The only reason he got back into doing the superhero stuff was because he was asked by Bendis and a couple of others to do them a favor and come and write some books.
Okay.
I don't know how much I 100% believe that. I mean, I know that his independent titles do better than a lot of other people's independent titles, but I don't think anybody's really living on their independent titles. I mean, if anybody, it would be Ellis just because he has so many of them. So, he usually has three or four independent titles coming out a month. So, if anyone could pull it off, arguably it would be Ellis. But
then he's also got like television deals and stuff like that he's working on as well. So.
Right, I know he's doing the Castlevania movie, and he has some other animation project that's in the works, and he was working with AMC on a pilot for a TV series that he pitched. So, I mean, I know he has, like, lots of irons and lots of fires, but I think a lot of why he does, stuff for Marvel, for example, is for the paycheck. And I think, I don't think he necessarily leaves because he hit the 12-issue mark. Mm-hmm. I think he pitches a story that'll probably run, 6 or 12 issues because that's how, Marvel likes to package their trade paperbacks.
Uh-huh.
So he'll pitch a story that he thinks he could tell in 6 or 12 issues, and he tells the story. But he's not getting too attached to it because he knows it ultimately it's not his. So he's not going to invest himself too much in it. Because ultimately, at any point, they can just yank it away from him and decide, oh no, he's going to have a crisis or something. And, so
before you know it, he's got an entirely different character on his hands. I guess I know what you're saying a little bit there. It's just I don't know. It feels like way too often with him. I'm just I'm reading it, I'm enjoying it, and then before I know it, he's off, and then the book sucks again. And I'd love for that not to happen with Thunderbolts. I think that's going to be the case because they're getting Christos Gage to go on it. But I've just been – let's put it this way. I've just been enjoying it so much that I hate to see him gone after only being on it for such a short time.
And, I've heard good things about Christos Gage. I haven't read his stuff, but I heard it's supposed to be good. And I'm looking forward to him doing The Man With No Name from Dynamite.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, based on the old Clint Eastwood westerns.
Oh, cool! Nice.
So, that should be a cool series with him. And is that? Yeah, I think that's him. Is that him or is
that
Jason
Aaron?
I think that's him.
No, Jason Aaron's going on to Hellblazer after Diggle's run.
Yeah. Right. And you see, now I was talking about that last night too. I said, you know, I'm enjoying Andy Diggle on Hellblazer, and I'm kind of disappointed to see that he's leaving and Jason Aaron is taking over.
Right.
And not because I've heard anyone say anything bad about Jason Aaron, but just because I'm really enjoying Andy Diggle's run. You know, again, I guess Jason Aaron's doing good stuff on Scalped, and I think, I guess I'm hearing good things on Ghost Rider, although, like I said,
well, he's done a lot better than what Way did.
Well, yeah, but, you know.
Daniel Way, again,
I think my son, who just scribbles on a piece of paper, can write better than what Way did.
Yeah.
Don't even get me started on Daniel Way. I could start going for ages. I'm annoyed that he's going to be the one who's going to be doing, you know, Deadpool, considering that Deadpool is one of my favorite characters, and I don't want to see him screw up Deadpool.
Do you know how to not see it? Don't buy it.
Yeah. I understand that, but for all I know, he'll do something to him, and then he'll show up like that and never get a book, you know? So I'd rather
Deadpool will have a gun arm as well.
Yeah, why not? The more the merrier. or you know, like Bishop and his cyborg arm, because having one person from the future with the cyborg arm wasn't nearly enough. But let's back it up a step here, and I want to ask Brent, actually, what have you thought of the Big Two's horror jaunts, even though there haven't been that many of them?
I don't know. I haven't even read Marvel Zombies yet. I think the only horror thing that I've read maybe from DC is, like, if you count Countdown to Mystery, because it's got that supernatural kind of feel to it.
Yeah.
Or at least the lead story. That's about it, though.
Well, I was going to say, like, maybe you can even mention Shadow Pact a little bit with some of the stuff that's going on in there with, you know, them going to hell and all that.
Yeah, you could, but I don't read that book.
Okay.
Well, also, you've got to remember, actually, in this month's solicitations, they've actually got the Reign in Hell miniseries coming up, which is an event going along with Final Crisis, so it's probably going to get lost.
And Giffen's but, writing that, right?
Yeah, and basically, you got Neron, like, I haven't got the solicitation in front of me, but you got Neron versus one of the other Lords of Hell, and they're going to basically be going at it, so.
It should be
looks
pretty
to be an
fun.
Interesting thing. It's got Etrigan on the front cover of it, so you can't go wrong with Etrigan.
Yeah. And yet again, Keith Giffen writes the big event that's going against the other big event.
Which means it'll turn out better than this one, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, definitely. Because Annihilation turned out a hell of a lot better than Civil War.
Yeah, but we're talking about Grant Morrison writing as well. So
yes, yes, yes. But, hey, but Grant Morrison could either write amazing stuff or he'll leave you scratching your head, and not in a good way. Most of the time, it's amazing, but every now and then he'll put out that one thing where you're like, "That would have been a good idea if a sane person wrote it."
Okay, well, a lot of the times I don't end up scratching my head that much with his stuff, so
right.
It probably goes to my sanity. But
I even like Sea Guy. I can't believe I like Sea Guy, but I liked Sea Guy. I had no idea what the hell was going on in that book half the time.
Yeah, you know, I heard that a lot. You see, I didn't pick up Sea Guy because it looked like it might be a little too goofy for me, but with Grant Morrison, the more out there, the better. Like, you know, I mean, I got into Chaos Magic reading The Invisibles. Mm-hmm. You know, that's when I started reading, you know, books by Chaos Magicians that he recommended in the letters page and stuff.
Right.
So,
but according to Marvel Comics, there is no Chaos Magic. Ba-dum-bum-tsh.
I like Grant Morrison. And
but even if you read like Flex Mentallo, have you ever read that?
Yeah, I got that.
That is way out. I think that's even more out there than what you actually get to in The Invisibles, because we can sort of follow The Invisibles to a degree.
But Flex Mentallo is
just
like out there.
Off from the word go.
I have actually. Grant Morrison did a 4-issue. Miniseries featuring Dan Dare. It was just called Dare. And it might actually have been a reprint. It might have been in some UK weekly or something over there.
Dare was in... When he was writing Dan Dare, I think it was actually in Eagle, which is a weekly that I used to pick up when I was younger. And that's what I've been interested in doing.
See, so. I didn't get that, but I got, I guess it was collected as a four-issue miniseries that, I don't know, some obscure indie publisher was putting out at some point. So I picked that up. And I actually dug that out recently because I was reading that going into Garth Ennis writing Dan Dare over at Virgin, which is pretty good. Another book that I guess is kind of mainstream and kind of horror would be Phil Hester's The Darkness from Image Comics.
I've heard of that, yeah, and obviously since it's Phil Hester, I'm interested.
That's really good.
Yeah, Phil I've Hester's doing a really good job with it.
Is he doing art on that also?
No.
No, oh, okay.
No,
all right.
It's Top Cow art, but it's Phil Hester's writing.
All right.
So
that's not too bad.
That's a pretty cool book.
Yeah. And just to mention Morrison for another minute here before you say your next thing, I've decided that now that it's Secret Invasion time and now that I read issue one, I'm finally going to take that Skrull Kill Crew trade that's been sitting on my shelf for the longest time and finally go ahead and read it, considering that, it's Skrull season in the Marvel Universe, so why don't I read Grant Morrison and Mark Miller's take on it?
Yeah, that's excellent. I have the original... the original issues on that, because I bought it when it was coming out. That's a funny book.
Oh, yeah.
I might have to dig that out myself.
Celebrating in style.
Yeah. And Grant Morrison and Mark Miller, again, go back to... this is practically a crossover with what we were talking about last night, because we were talking about this, too. Grant Morrison and Mark Miller did four issues of... the Swamp Thing run before Mark Miller and Phil Hester on the art to bring things totally full circle wrapped up that run. Because
what does Kevin Bacon have to do with this?
I don't know. Was he in the Swamp Thing movie?
He might have been, for all we know.
he can't be far removed from somebody in one of the movies. but yeah, we were talking about this last night. Swamp Thing Volume 1 was the original Len Wein, Bernie Wrightson stuff from the 70s, and then Volume 2, Alan Moore took over, I guess, around number 20.
Issue 20, yeah.
And
20 to 64.
64, and then 65 to like around 74 or so was Rick Veitch, and then it was Nancy A. Collins who did the Sonya Blue novels. Mm-hmm. And
the comic that actually came out through Verotic.
Verotic, right. And a lot of people were not really fans of her Swamp Thing, yourself, myself included. I don't know. I don't know. It was a very different take and wasn't really, I think, what anyone was looking for or expecting from Swamp Thing.
That'll happen if takes are too a little bit out there for people. They just won't go to it, even if the book is good. If it's a character that you've known for years and it's just an oddball like idea about it, then people are just going to look the other way.
Yeah, and then after her run, Grant Morrison and Mark Miller did a four-issue run followed by nearly 30 issues of Mark Miller and Phil Hester where they closed out that Volume 2 of Swamp Thing. Mm-hmm. And that's a really cool run, and that was actually, I think, my introduction to Mark Miller because, I hadn't been familiar with the stuff he was doing in the UK, I guess, like 2000 AD and stuff, but so I picked it up because of Grant Morrison, and then when he dropped that after four issues, I was like, all right, I'll pick it up, and I'll see how it is, and whatever, and it turns out that Miller kid could write, so... I stuck with it for the whole rest of the run. It was actually really good, and
thinking Grant Morrison writing about a creature that can create his own drugs.
Oh, that's good.
I still remember in that 10th anniversary of Hellblazer where basically they summoned up Swamp Thing so he could give him some of his special weed.
That's some good shit. And is it
You would think Grant Morrison would be able to, or be inclined to want to run with that.
Yeah. Is it sad to
Maybe
say
he
that?
Maybe didn't. That's why he was off the book.
I think the first Mark Miller thing I ever read was an issue of the Marvel comic inside a Marvel comic, where what Marvel comics are like in the Marvel universe, where Mark Miller did this version of the X-Men, where they were like being controlled by Colonel America, and they were like a secret organization from the government, almost like the Suicide Squad, where they were villains being used for good or something like that. And that was the first thing I ever read of Mark Miller. And then from there, I, you know, saw him on other big name things, and I'm like, oh, so I saw him there. And then he wrote Ultimate X-Men, which was a little bit of a take on that, and Ultimates, which was a little bit of a take on that. Yeah. All right. Well, I think at this point, let me ask Brent. You got any questions you want to ask these boys or anything like that? Because you've been pretty silent all call. So I want to see if you got.
I think we're getting.
Yeah. No, I just got two tests tomorrow. I got a test tomorrow night, one Friday, so I'm kind of focusing on that.
Yeah, I kind of figured that you were probably studying all episode.
Yeah. Don't worry, we'll send you a third test on what we've been talking about.
Now, which of the following are horror comics, and which one did we make up? Answer, if it's called Shlomo's Big Adventure, it's probably fake.
I want to read that one, though.
The Adventures of Shlomo, the Jew Boy.
We should speak to Dwight and Kate to write it.
Oh, boy. All right, well, we're getting to about, let's see, it's about an hour and 30 minutes here, so how about we switch from horror to some recent things that came out news-wise that might be of interest to all of you boys, especially the Incredible Hulk trailer, which aired. Because we were going to talk about this on the show last week, but we didn't get a chance to, so let's get everybody involved in this for a little bit. Who has seen the Hulk trailer, and who has a response to said Hulk trailer? Everybody on the call see it?
I've seen it.
I watched it. If it's the one I'm thinking of, I watched it online.
Okay.
They should have just called the Abomination Savage Dragon. It was like a cross between the Savage Dragon and was it the Goomba from the
From Mario Brothers.
From Mario Brothers.
Mario Brothers movie, yeah.
Yes. That's what I was thinking the entire time. I'm like, holy crap, they must have got the same makeup guy.
The Abominable Dragon.
The Abominable Cooper Dragon. But yeah, so what? Other than the Abomination, was this trailer an abomination, or do you think it's going to look good?
Looked all right.
Looks all right to me. I'll check it out, so... As long as I can sort of sit through the first half, not like with the last one. Or I couldn't even stand getting through half of it.
Well,
at least you see the Hulk.
At least the Hulk isn't lime green this time.
Yeah, but now he's like yellow green.
But it looks more like the Hulk. And he's got better hair. I don't know.
He's got a better stylist, that's what it is.
It looks like it's going to be all right. I mean, I'm not expecting brilliant cinema from it, but I'm expecting it should be a decent, you know, superhero movie.
Yeah. No, I agree with that also. I mean, it's definitely going to be better than the last one because I'm sure there aren't going to be any, like, faux comic book pages going on the screen or anything like that.
Oh, it'll please.
Be great.
I could not stand that at all. Ugh.
Yeah,
yuck.
Well, I don't know.
You know, I must be the only person who really appreciated that because, you know, you could tell that he was at least trying. You could tell that he was trying to do something clever and, like, at least, you know, I don't know if you want to say he was, like, giving a wink to the comic fans or something, but he at least acknowledged that it was a comic book movie, unlike, you know, so many movies that are based on comics that... You know, there's really no indication that it had ever had anything to do with comics. So,
right.
Yeah, it really didn't bother me as much as it bothered nearly everybody else.
I didn't think it was clever. I thought it was distracting. I couldn't focus what was on the screen because there are three different images of the same fucking helicopter flying over the desert. I don't know which one to look at. And then one of them switches to the general, and he's a little bitty thing in the bottom of the screen, and then I still got this big fucking helicopter flying. I don't know what to watch.
Well,
am I watching the helicopter or the guy with the mustache? I don't know. Helicopter? Got the mustache. I don't know.
You know what it reminded me of, actually? It reminded me of the split-screen technique that 24 uses, like when they're going to the clock. The only problem is it didn't go away.
I don't know. I think if you could follow subtitles, you could follow multiple panels on the screen.
Yes, but see, I follow subtitles on a regular basis. I love anime, and I watch anime. And if there were four images of the anime on the screen, I'd have a bit of a problem with it.
Well, I mean, the Ultimate Spider-Man game kind of did something like what that old Hulk movie did. Mm-hmm. But they would have a cinematic, and then they would switch to a different panel or something.
Yeah.
But the cinematic would play in one panel, and then it would stop, and it would freeze frame, so you'd have that one image, and then they go to the next panel, and then that picture would start up and play some cinematic, and you'd zoom in and zoom out and stuff. But it wasn't like five different things happening at the same time. Like if you had a comic page and with five different panels on it and they're all moving at the same time, you'd be totally confused. You know what I mean?
Sure. Like I said, I fully acknowledge that it bothered a lot of people. Just unsurprisingly, I didn't fall in with the crowd.
Well, I mean, everybody likes their own thing, you know. I mean, if it was okay for you, then that's perfectly fine. I mean, the movie did still make plenty of money. I mean, that obviously means that people did go see it, and I know that there are other people out there that were okay with the movie. It just wasn't what I was looking for. But if it was what you were looking for, then hey, that's good for you. You know, I mean, if you can go away from it saying that was a good Hulk movie, then hell, you're better off than I am. Hey. All right, and we got some new stuff from the Joker that came out today for Dark Knight, and I saw the images, and you know, it was more Joker. I mean, it wasn't anything that spoiler or anything. Like people were like, oh no, spoilers! What are you gonna do? But I mean, it was revealing like very very small bits and pieces, like one screen a piece from the movie. So it didn't really like ruin anything for me, like it did other people for some reason.
I got the Gotham Times newspaper. Have you guys been getting that?
No, I haven't, actually.
I don't actually know how to get it. All I know is that my girlfriend, the TV station that she works at, has a whole bunch of them. So she grabbed one for me. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty cool. It's like two pages, like, you know, a big newspaper fold. And it's got full articles. And it says, like, go to A3, go to A1. And there's an ad for the Iceberg Lounge.
Oh, sweet.
DJ Tux. You know, it's really cool.
And, I mean, does it have, like, articles about, like, Harvey Dent and stuff, or...?
Yeah, the main one on this one says, Harvey Dent joins race for Gotham DA. Then there's an article about Batman stops mob melee. There's a health department assures city jump in fear toxin cases no cause for alarm. Wonder what that could be about.
Ooh.
I don't know. It's just looking at it is really cool. Makes you feel like you're living in that world, you know?
Yeah. Kind of makes me feel like for a minute there that New York actually is Gotham.
Yeah.
but Brian, I know that you know, you were, from at least, you know, from conversation with you, that you were a fan of Batman Begins. Are you looking forward to Dark Knight as much as Batman Begins?
Oh, definitely. I'm a big fan of Christopher Nolan. I actually just watched Memento again the other night, mm-hmm. which I love that film. The movie is just brilliant, and the more you watch it, the more you really catch the motivation of what the characters were doing in each scene. Mm-hmm. I don't know if any of you have seen Memento.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Refresh my memory on it, because I think I might have, but I'm not quite certain.
It kind of works its way backwards. The main character can't make any new memories, so he has to keep writing himself notes, and he takes Polaroids, and okay. he tattoos information
stuff
on his body and stuff. And the movie kind of works its way backwards in time, because he's trying to figure out like who he is and who killed his wife that and caused his brain damage so that he can't make any more memories. Mm-hmm. And it's a real mind twist of a movie for sure, and huh. it's brilliant. And actually, when I first heard that he was doing Batman Begins, I was like, okay, well, you might buy my ticket now, because I'm like, the guy who did Memento is doing Batman Begins. I'm sold. And then when they told me that you had Christian Bale from American Psycho playing Batman, I'm like, I'm done.
You know, I've got American Psycho on my Netflix queue. It's like the next movie on my Netflix queue once I'm done with 12 Monkeys. So
that's a fun movie.
Yeah, so I'm definitely seeing that. I love The Prestige. The Prestige was fantastic. And, I mean, that one, you know, obviously that was after Batman Begins, but that was another Nolan movie that just had me on the edge of my seat the entire time. It's like I describe it best, and I've described it multiple times. Like it's a really good episode of The Outer Limits. You know, it's like it's a 2.5 hour long, or however long it is, episode of The Outer Limits just hits on every single cylinder.
Yeah, that's awesome. I know I heard a lot of good things about it. I never get around to watching it, but I definitely will because, I'm a fan of both of those guys.
Yeah, and plus you get to watch Batman beat up Wolverine.
Yeah, you gotta like that.
Yeah, both of them using different accents in their normal accents as usual. Yeah. Well, I like how Christian Bale does that with every movie, uses a different accent, because he doesn't like using the same accent twice. It's a good friend.
Well, and even when he's promoting like a film, if he's using like an American accent in the film, then he talks in all the interviews like in an American accent, you know?
Yeah.
So there's no like this jarring thing like this motherfucking Brit can be Batman. What the fuck, man?
Anybody here see the viral videos that Marvel put out on MySpace for Secret Invasion?
I saw the one with that freaky scroll guy that's like, it is written. That's about it, though.
Okay. Yeah, that was just the animation thing that they put out. Because they did this thing, actually, for the last, I think, like 3 weeks, they had this one account on MySpace. I forget the name of the girl, but they had her just doing like regular like MySpace videos, and eventually she starts noticing some changes in her brother, and her brother goes to ESU, so that's one sign that obviously this is something viral and not like a real video blog, because there is no ESU in real life, and I forget what professor the brother worked for, but it was like one of the old professors that Peter Parker had when he was going to ESU. And she starts noticing changes, and she finds like maps under his bed of like major New York City areas, and walks in on him practicing sayings in the mirror, like "Hello, Mr. Johnson. How are you, Mr. Johnson?" And obviously gets revealed to be a Skrull in the end, and that's the big viral video thing. And now they're actually releasing one page per day, I think, on Marvel's digital comics site, of a tie-in comic to Secret Invasion tying to this viral video. So it's kind of interesting that they built that up over weeks. But if you guys do actually want to check it out, it's on MySpace. And again, they do a decent job of creating an entire world of you know, for this character, and making you actually believe that she might actually be human. Let's see, what other comic news came out recently? That I'm forgetting about. Oh, yeah! Legion of Three Worlds. There you go. That should be fun. Geoff Johns and George Perez doing a Legion of Superheroes story tying it to Final Crisis. What are you thinking about that?
From the two pages that I saw, I haven't read Action Comics yet, but what they had on Newsarama looks great. And I don't know if I'm going to get it, but I probably will end up getting it.
It's hard,
just because I like George Perez, and Geoff Johns is hard to pass up.
Oh, yeah. Are you a fan of The Legion, Brian?
Nah. It's one of the superhero things, right?
Yes, I know. It's one of the superhero things. Yes, I know. Poo-pooing that. Yes. Yeah, what can I say? Well, it's one of the better ones, let's put it that way, because at least you can know, even if you're not into superheroes that much, to a lot of what Geoff Johns turns to gold these days. And it's another one of those projects that really only got started because Geoff Johns came up with an idea. So it's like Marvel has Brian Bendis and DC has Geoff Johns, and whatever they do usually turns out somewhat decent. So I'm looking forward to that. It's pretty. It's got pretty art, too. Art's pretty.
Yeah, you gotta like that, I suppose. I don't know. I'm just so far removed from any of that stuff. Yeah. It's not even a matter of, you know, whether I have a strong opinion about it one way or another. I'm just, it doesn't even hit my radar.
Right, right.
It's like, for the thousands of people who don't look at the back end of previews, I'm the guy who like mostly skips the front of previews.
But that's a good thing. That's a good thing because you catch a lot of the stuff that nobody else does.
Yeah, like Gene Simmons' zipper.
I don't really want you catching Gene Simmons' zipper. I'm sorry. That sounds a little lewd and crude, and I don't know where he's been.
Well, you can actually read the first issue on Newsarama.
Really? Wow.
Yep. It's, I think, a four-issue miniseries from IDW, and the first issue is available on Newsarama, and it looks science fictional.
Now, this is written by Gene Simmons, or is this just created by
him? It's created by Gene Simmons, written by Tom Waltz, who's
okay.
also running the Gene Simmons House of Horror.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, I might have to check it out. I don't know. Just I don't really think of the name Gene Simmons as anything other than a man in funny makeup.
Well, Gene Simmons House of Horror has been pretty good, but it's not so much him writing as, like I said, he's basically doing like the Crypt Keeper type thing. Gene Simmons zipper. Okay, here's the description. It says, in the cross-dimensional galaxy known as the Nether Ether, there is a planet called Etheria where personal freedom is considered a crime punishable by death. For Denizen Zen-Ral, the desperate need for autonomy drives him to escape to Earth and new dangers he never thought possible.
Huh.
And if you look at the art on the Newsarama page, I mean, the art is pretty cool. It looks pretty tripped out. I mean, it looks very cosmic science fiction.
Yeah, I'm actually clicking on it right now just so I can take a look at it. So let's let this load here. Eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Come on. There you go. Huh. Yeah. Interesting. That's Casey Maloney on the pencils. And, you know, that actually... That's a pretty appealing art style right there. Reminds me a little bit of the art in Annihilation, actually, which was mostly done by, I think, Paul Pelletier and Tom Rainey. But it's got a similar color style to that, and the faces look nice. So, yeah, I mean, it might be something that I pick up if I got a couple extra bucks.
Yeah, and it says inks by Stacy Ponder, whose name is ringing a bell for some reason. I don't know, maybe someone mentioned it on one of the forums or something, but that name sounds vaguely familiar, too.
Yeah. Well, that is certainly a possibility.
Yeah, like I said, I didn't pick it up, so I mean, I can't really vouch for it, but I saw that the first issue was available online, so I was just scanning through it, and it looks pretty trippy.
Nice. So, have you been picking up Freddy versus Jason versus Ash, by the way?
No,
you skipped it.
Okay, yeah. Right.
See, I'm curious because I want to find at least somebody who picked it up just to see whether or not it's actually worth it in trade. Because I know that it was originally going to be a movie. Once upon a time, I mean, they wanted to do a Freddy versus Jason versus Ash movie, but they couldn't get the rights to Ash.
Right.
Yeah.
That may not necessarily been the worst thing. you know, I don't know. I mean. I don't know. People like the Marvel Zombies books. People loved the Marvel Zombies vs. Army of Darkness books. And I've heard pretty good things on the Freddy vs. Jason vs. Ash books, but I don't know. I don't know why I look at it, and I'm just... I don't know. I'm not feeling it.
Well, again, it's not your thing. I mean, that perfectly acceptable. Just like... You know, some of the stuff I'm sure you're into, I'm not into. Some of the stuff I'm into, you're not into. You said, just like I've said 20 times in this episode, you say tomato, I say tomato. We all got our own things.
Yeah. You know what actually does look pretty good, and I kind of wish I picked it up, and if they release a trade, I'll probably will get it, is they're doing an adaptation of the original Evil Dead at Dark Horse, and it's all painted by... Mark Verheiden, I think.
Yeah, I heard about this, yeah.
And the artwork, of course, I mean, it looks gorgeous, but it looks like it's probably, from what I've seen, a pretty faithful adaptation. So, like I said, I hadn't picked up the single issues, but if Dark Horse puts out a trade, or if I find the single issue somewhere, I'd probably pick it up. That looks pretty cool.
Yeah. I was lucky enough to see Evil Dead the Musical when it was in my my neck of the woods, and I gotta tell you, I've never seen something that strange before in my life. I mean, they cram as much Evil Dead into that as possible. I think that they put almost, I think maybe 2 out of 3 movies in there, even with some of the third one. And hey, I mean, it was fun and all, but it's like, but again, my brain was swimming with all the guts and blood that was pouring into the audience.
Well, that's kind of funny.
Yeah. All right, Damien, I believe, is still doing his thing with the repairman who came, but I'd say we're pretty much wrapped up here. I mean, unless there's anything else. Oh yeah, there is one more other thing. Brent, do you want to announce what our next 22 pages is going to be?
It's going to be The Invincible Iron Man by Matt Fraction and Salvador La Roca.
Yes, indeed. And that comes out in, was that May, right?
Yeah, May. So we'll probably do it end of May, beginning of June.
Right, yeah. And we're going to try and get some people who are fans of Iron Man on and have a nice selection of people. And this time, it'll actually be a 22 pages as opposed to like a 68 or an 88 or something like that with the last one we had.
Well, that one wasn't bad. We had a lot of fun on that one.
Oh, yeah. No, it was a lot of fun.
That's syndicated.
Too. Yeah, I know. And it was I want to thank Mr. John Mayo for syndicating it as well. I'm just saying. It's called 22 Pages, so we might as well go back to being 22 Pages, even though I'm sure this one will probably be 32 pages and screw that up again.
Well, I mean, if we put it off long enough, it'll be like the Nova one. We'll have like 1 and 2 and 3.
Jeez. Yeah, see, that's something you got to learn about us, Brian. When we say that we're going to do something, we do it, but maybe about 7 or 8 months down the line.
Yeah, and a little longer than expected.
Yeah, you know, like having you on to talk horror.
There you go. Yeah, there's actually a couple of things we could squeeze in here.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Let's see. Okay, well, anyone who remembers Tom Mandrake from The Spectre, there's a graphic novel coming out by he's doing the art with Stephen Grant writing the story. It's called The Safest Place. And the premise is, what would you do if you couldn't physically feel any pain? Would you try to take one death risk after another just to try and feel something? Or would you try to be a hero? How about something in between? And that's basically the premise for this story. This guy can't feel pain, but he gets into all of these situations, like trying to help people and stuff. But they're like situations that are either so dangerous or, you know, just too scary for normal people. But since he can't feel pain, he'll just go in and do it. So
now it's just that he doesn't have the pain receptors, or just
right.
Okay.
So yeah, it's not that he can't be hurt; it's just that he can't feel pain. So
interesting.
Interesting take. And I mean, Stephen Grant, I mean, he's written a million things, but probably most well known for the infamous Stephen Grant Mike Zeck 5-issue Punisher miniseries. And like I said, I mean, again, Tom Mandrake, pretty much if he does it, I'm gonna be at least interested in it.
The basic concept actually reminds me a little bit of something very, very different that I read like 2 novels of, or maybe even more than that back in the day. Fearless, which was a set of novels about this girl who didn't have the fear gene. So that actually did a lot with pain as well, because pain is associated with fear a lot of the times. And so she would get penance. But she would get into situations where, you know, nobody else would really get into because she wasn't afraid to do it. So if she were to break her arm, she'd just brush it off because that's just the way it went. But obviously this is a bit of a more mature type graphic novel at least, that Mandrake's putting out.
Yeah, that's the take that I'm getting from it. That book, Last Blood, we were talking about with the humans, the last humans and the vampires teaming up against the zombies. Looks like Variety reported that it's been optioned for a movie. So,
if you pick up the comics, you can just wait for the movie, I guess.
Yeah, but you know what? Everything's been optioned for a movie at this point. I mean, it seems like every single thing that I'm reading right now has a movie attached to it.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a good reason for that, too, though. Because, I've spoken with a couple of publishers and more than a couple of creators. And you know, some of the publishers have told me that they can't, you know, they barely break even selling an independent book. And if they can't option the rights and get some money on that end, it's hardly worth it for them to even put out an independent book. Yeah. You know, put out like a book that isn't a licensed property, basically. You know, put out a creator-owned book. So that's probably at least a big part of why we hear so much about books being optioned or licensed or whatever.
Yeah.
Because you know, that's almost the deal going in. Like, you know, you'll pitch it to a publisher, and if the publisher feels like he can place it with a studio, then he'll publish your book because, you know, he'll get a piece of the media rights.
Yeah.
So
yeah, I mean, sometimes the movie options are done before the book even comes out.
That's what I'm saying.
Right,
you know, usually that may even predicate whether or not the book gets published.
Right. Okay. Yeah. I get what you're saying. Yeah. And I mean, sometimes, I mean, even with the bigger things that, you know, everybody knows about, like, I mean, like recently I heard that there's going to be certain things explained in the Why the Last Man movies that weren't explained in the actual novel. I mean, in the actual comics, because Brian K. Vaughan is the guy who's scripting everything and getting things going. He's going to be able to put things into the movie that never made it into the comic, which is pretty damn cool. And, you know, we'll be able to find out. I believe the exact thing that we're going to find out is the origin of the Amazons, which is something that we never actually find out in Why the Last Man, that we'll find out in the Why the Last Man movie. So I'm sure that happens a lot with even the comics. For independent comics, there'll be things that are in the movie that maybe never made it into the comic or vice versa.
Yeah, and it looks like Stan Lee's POW Entertainment have set up a three-picture deal with Walt Disney.
Oh, my God.
They going to do Stripperella again?
Hey there, true believers. Take off your pants.
And jacket. Well,
no, they got three projects. Nick Ratchet, Blaze, and Tigress.
Because these sound like Disney properties. Oh, my God. Holy crap. What the hell is Disney thinking?
I don't even know. But it says Nick Ratchet, which sounds like it could be a porno, I guess.
Hey, baby, I'm Nick Ratchet, here to fix your fence. I got my ratchet here for you. You want me to use it? Oh, yes, use your ratchet, baby.
Actually, you should probably try and sound more like Gerard Butler, since he's starring as the title character in Nick Ratchet.
Oh, that's brilliant. Live action or cartoon?
Doesn't say.
All right.
Then let's see. Yeah, they don't really have much more than that on ICV2. But yeah, so yeah, just throw that out there. It seems kind of funny.
Jeez.
And
Stan Lee will do anything for money, won't he?
Hey, you gotta make that loot. You know,
give
the
grandkids money, true believers.
Hey, he had a fight for how many years to get his 10% off of those Marvel properties that he was promised 20 years ago?
Hey, well, I guarantee you, if not for Stan Lee, then the whole thing with the Superman rights would have never happened.
Well, okay. We're going to cliff note this one because otherwise this would be a 3-hour episode. But
Greed is all I have to say.
Oh, come on.
It's ridiculous.
The first thing is, it wasn't work for hire, unlike everything that was done at Marvel. So that's most of what dictated the fact that Siegel's heirs got half of Action Comics number one, and Schuster's heirs will be petitioning for the other half in 2013.
Right.
So that's a real big part of it, and that's why, you know, when people start saying, oh, what does this mean for other books and whatever, well, it doesn't mean anything if they were work for hire, which most books were. So that's really like a non-issue.
Well, I did, however, hear that Vertigo was when, and again, this is a couple of weeks ago or maybe even months ago at this point, that was in lying in the gutters. They said this, that Warner Brothers, Time Warner, was actually trying to renegotiate or at least change for in the future the Vertigo contracts wording so that more of the rights would fall on Time Warner than with the creators for major motion pictures, because a lot of these creators were taking their works to companies that were not Time Warner.
I thought that was actually a done deal. I heard that a long time ago. I thought that went. I heard that it went through a while ago. Mm-hmm. That a rep from Time Warner was talking with a rep from Vertigo and said, basically found out how little, in his opinion, Vertigo and Time Warner controlled the media rights, and said, you know, we got to fix that.
Yeah.
So I heard about that too.
Yeah.
That might be why you see more people taking stuff to Image or Avatar or other publishers, just because, I mean, with Image, you pretty much own everything. With Avatar, I haven't heard much about how vested they are in the media rights, but it does seem like you could do nearly anything you damn well please at Avatar. It seems like the editorial reins are real loose over at Avatar.
Yeah.
Judging by what Garth Ennis and Warren Ellis have put out. But
buy him a drink and you can do anything.
Yeah. But last thing, we got movies, a major focus at New York Comic Con, world premiere of the Spirit trailer. We got writer-director Frank Miller and star Eva Mendes will appear at a panel for Miller's adaptation of Will Eisner's The Spirit.
I'm still kind of skeptical about this. I don't know how this is going to turn out. I mean, I've never really thought of The Spirit as a Frank Miller-style, adaptation before.
Well, wasn't he, best friends with Will Eisner or good friends for a long time?
He was very close to Will Eisner. I read it's a really good book, if you want to check it out.
Yeah.
Yeah, Eisner Miller, it's called, and it's excellent. I own it, and I can't recommend it highly enough. You learn a lot about the history of the industry from Eisner's point of view, which is pretty interesting because he was around for most of it. And you get a little bit of back and forth with Eisner and Miller. They didn't always agree, but you did always have the feeling that there was that mutual respect and admiration for each other. And it's a really, really good book. I mean, if you're at all interested in either of those creators or anything in the history of the comic industry, you should definitely check out Eisner Miller. It's definitely a cool book. Really just based on that, I'm looking forward to it anyway. You know, I don't even care if it's Frank Miller's The Spirit in Sin City, because, you know, I like Sin City and I like Frank Miller, and I don't care. But you got to remember, a lot of Frank Miller's early Daredevil stuff was, some will say inspired, some will say lifted from what Will Eisner did in The Spirit. So, that might be where you should be looking to get an idea of what he might be doing with The Spirit. It might be along the lines of Daredevil. And, again, not necessarily to say that that's what people are looking for, because sure, Miller's Daredevil wasn't Eisner's The Spirit either, but I'm guessing it'll probably be closer to that maybe than Sin City. Although, if you look at that movie poster he did, it's pretty much Sin City.
well, that movie poster was also done specifically, drawn by him. For all we know, it might look very different when it's an actual movie. But
I don't think the movie looks like that. I think that's just a promo thing.
Yeah, that's Frank Miller being like, "I get to draw The Spirit. Awesome." All right, before this episode goes too insane here, I guess we should probably end up wrapping things up a little bit. But before we do, Damien, we got to record some Rogues Gallery sometime soon, man.
I know. As I found out today, we're moving in about 2 or 3 weeks, so
right.
I don't think I'll have any chance on my days off coming up. But after that, once we've sort of set up, we'll definitely do some.
Excellent.
And we're definitely going to be doing Deadpool as
oh,
well.
Yes.
I know that much.
Oh, yes. That'll be the first one we do, and then from there we'll go on to other characters. But Deadpool will certainly be next on the list for the Rogues Gallery.
It was probably the most requested one out of them, so...
Yeah, because he's the greatest non-villain villain there is. And obviously you can find all of Damien's stuff at wardshaper.com and wardshaper.com/cryptographic for cryptographic. And what other places can they find cryptographic?
You can find other stuff for me as well on the readerfeed.blogspot.com.
Oh, yeah.
I'm doing
yeah.
the Dr. Sleepless podcast, which you never replied to me when I said, did you listen to it?
I didn't get a chance to yet. I'm a busy man. No, it's honestly on my queue of many, many podcasts I need to listen to. So once I get to it, I'll let you know what I thought.
But, I've just actually last night, I recorded and edited, and I hate editing. I have no idea what you're talking about. Yeah. it's off with Derek at the moment, so as soon as he gets it uploaded, it'll be uploaded. So.
Nice.
It's imminent.
Sweet. And so what did you guys end up doing with Bob? Was that a cryptographic, or was that...
Cryptographic.
That's going to be the next episode of Cryptographic. We're going to have Bob Breitholt from the Comic Book Page podcast. And... like I said, we talk about Hellblazer, we talk about Lock and Key, we talk a little bit of
Swamp
the history
Thing.
Of Constantine and Swamp Thing, and, you know, it wanders around almost, but not quite as much as this episode.
Yeah, this was almost like...
And we went on for what, a further 3 hours after we finished recording.
Nice.
Oh, my God. Yeah, well, there was almost an hour before we started recording.
Yeah.
And then we recorded a good 2 hours worth, and then I think we bullshit for like another hour or so.
Brilliant.
It was 5 hours in total from that we were online.
Yeah, that's the only way to fly, man. Come on. Bullshitting is what it's all about. That's the way we roll.
But, yeah, fucking marathon.
This is almost like the April Fool's episode of Comic Timing here with all the different places we went. It's like, yeah, we're going to talk about one thing, and then, you know, before we know it, we're talking about everything else. But that's also the way we roll also. So, as I said, that like 4 times all episode long. But, Brent, you got any deep BK's bullets or anything upcoming? Probably no, right?
No.
Yeah, I figured.
I'm thinking of stuff, but there's too much on my plate right now.
Okay. If you were to come out with a BK's bullets, what would it be about?
Your mom?
Oh, your face. Son of a... Well, hey, how about how awesome Nightwing is?
Yeah, but that won't be on our feed.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. Why don't you do that? You can do that.
Yeah, I can do it with BK's bullet. It's great.
You can make it a Yan's Yam. I don't know.
Yan's Yam? All right. So, yeah. So, again, so check out BK's Bullets, RagingBullets.com, and, you know, whenever he wants to put them out on the Comic Timing feed. And I have a new rant timing up, which is basically just a post I made about Secret Invasion. It's spoilerific, so if you don't want to be spoiled on Secret Invasion, don't read it. But if you've already read the issue, then go ahead and read it, and you'll have my thoughts of where Secret Invasion is probably ending up to go. All right, gentlemen, let's wrap this baby up here, because I think we've got about 2 hours, and it was an awesome random episode, and I'm glad that I corralled both of you guys into it. So definitely next time you want to come on, you're more than welcome to.
Yeah, it was awesome. Thanks, man.
Yeah, no problem. Yeah,
now we're just going to finish doing our episode.
And, the next time you see Brian on the episode, it might very well be having certain people from a certain company on to talk about the company, so that should be pretty fun.
Yeah, but it's all very top secret, clandestine.
Yeah. Shh, nobody needs to know. But probably by the end of the month, so you'll be able to check it out. But anyway, the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com/forum. Graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We're proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. We're also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasters over at comicbooknoise.com/league. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. Please dig us on dig.com. And please send us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. So for Brent, for Brian, and for Damian, I'm Ian Levesey, reminding everybody out there that there's always time for comics, especially the horror ones. So there. I actually picked up two of the Silent Hill comics that were published.
Okay.
That actually turned out to be pretty decent. I mean, you know, along the lines of the games, and you know, I mean, what was that?
This door.
Brent just fell off his chair.
We haven't WD-40'd the door. Gonna squeak.
Was that flashing coming up behind him and hit him on the back of the head?
Yeah.
And fell off the chair. But...
I know it's a horror, man. I know it's a horror episode, man. But you don't have to get killed. Shit. Jesus. But. All right. Let me say that again.
Totally.
But what are the things that they're premiering at NYCC?
We got Universal sponsoring panels for Hellboy 2, The Golden Army with Guillermo del Toro and Mike Mignola, and a Wanted panel with Mark Miller and director Timur Bekmambetov, something like that.
I like how they took every bit of superheroes out of Wanted.
Yeah, well, you know, it's probably because they felt it would appeal to a broader audience.
I guess. I mean, it still sounds enough like the original, you know, source material where it still might appeal to me, but I enjoyed the original source material so much that this is going to be a bit difficult for me to swallow when I actually sit down and watch it.
Sure. Yeah, a lot of people feel like that, but, you know, when I saw the trailer online with my girlfriend, because, you know, well, I saw it, and then I wanted to get her take, because she doesn't really read much in the way of comics. Like, I can occasionally throw something her way, and she'll check it out, but
right.
She's not, like, necessarily a comic book fan, per se. Not opposed, but doesn't go out of her way, either. So I wanted to kind of get her take on the trailer, and she saw it, and she thought it looked really cool. So I'm guessing that's probably going to be the take. I'm guessing that people unfamiliar with the comics will probably enjoy it a lot, and people who love the comics will probably piss on it.
Well, and the fact that Morgan Freeman and Angelina Jolie are in it, that helps.
Works for me. Marvel has a panel with the new Hulk film director, Louis Leterrier, and the producers, and Warner Brothers are going to have previews of the manga-based Speed Racer and the new Batman film, The Dark Knight.
Cool. So maybe we'll get the new Dark Knight trailer there.
Yeah, it could be. And then, let's see. Oh, then they got, like, a bunch of other stuff. They got Indiana Jones and Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, X-Files 2, Narnia 2, Harold and Kumar Escape from Guantanamo Bay, Journey to the Center of the Earth, some TV show stuff, Battlestar Galactica, Doctor Who, Ghost Hunters, Starship Troopers, Marauder, Trenches, and Back at the Barnyard.
Cool. And this will all be in their movie pavilion.
Yeah.
Well, I had heard something about possibly having the Iron Man, like, premiere or something like that, but I don't know if that's actually going to end up happening.
Yeah, it's interesting that they left that out, because, I mean, they mentioned that Marvel was going to have the Hulk panel, and they might have some stuff at the Marvel booth.
Right.
Like last year, they had this Spider-Man trailer running for Spider-Man 3.
Yeah.
When does
Spider-Man 3 come out? I don't know. I haven't really heard much about it. I mean, it's almost as if it never happened.
That's a good thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I still haven't seen it yet.
I've got a 4-year-old here who loves Spider-Man, and he walked out on watching the DVD.
Oh my god!
What?
Wow! I didn't think it was that bad. I mean, wow.
And this is a kid who sat through the Hulk. right? So he can sit through the Hulk, and he walked out on watching Spider-Man, which is his favorite character.
Oh, holy crap.
That poor kid.
Well, did you get a chance to download any of the Sensational Spider-Man or whatever it is, the new Spider-Man animated series for him?
No, not yet. Haven't bothered.
Well, if there
we'll
is...
see one... when we come. I just keep on recording the Teen Titans when they replay it for him and he's happy.
There you go. But, it might actually be somewhat decent because Greg Daniels, the guy who did Gargoyles, is behind this new one. But
I didn't know that. I love that show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I've actually got the original comics that came out in the 90s for it.
So. Oh, wow. Nice. Very nice. I mean, I'm picking up the current stuff, but I didn't actually manage to pick up the 90s comics.
Yeah, I actually went looking for the first trade for it the other day and couldn't find it. So
sweet.
I'll pick it up at some other point.
Yeah, I'll have to search eBay for the old 90s Gargoyle stuff, I guess.
Search that's on there?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
The cheap bins.
Damn straight. But yeah, while you were gone, Damien, we talked a little bit about Dark Knight, and I know that you're certainly looking forward to that.
Yeah, it looks really good. So. Yeah, I only saw that first one with the first one they showed with the Joker in it, but it looks really good. I can't wait for that one.
Yeah, well, we were saying also that they might be premiering the second trailer actually at New York Comic Con, and if they do, obviously we'll have a thorough report of it when it happens, because so pretty.
Yeah, we'll tell you what you missed.
Yeah.
Yeah, like last. So, yeah.
Come on, how much we got to pay to get your ass out of here?
Well, I put a thread up actually last year, didn't I? Like, you helped me get over there, and nobody said anything to it, so I don't think anyone wants to. Maybe in the next year or so. I don't think it'll be next year, maybe the year after I'll be able to for it, so.
Yeah, we need people to hit that PayPal button on LordSheaver.com/cryptographic.
Yeah, sure, I'll PayPal you $10,000. Wait, no.
Damien, if we both go the year after next, we can make an event of it. Because that'll probably be by the time I make it out there, too.
Yeah, great. It'll be Brent Cassina, hopefully with a clearer nose and
no exams.
Yeah, no exams, and Damien all
and
the way.
And money in his pocket.
Damien could probably row a boat there in 2 years.
He'll have to have a lot of food in that boat, though. But there are fish that he could eat, I guess.
Sure.
Well, except for I don't eat fish, but that's not the thing.
Hey, you could do whatever you need to do to get it to row yourself over, man. Once it reaches international waters, you can do whatever you want. But before we end it here, I know we talked a little bit about New York Comic Con before, but New York Comic Con 2008 is coming. Head on over to Jacob Javits Center April 18th to 20th and experience the largest pop culture event to take place on the East Coast. An enormous show floor plays host to top entertainment industry leaders, showcasing the latest and greatest in comics, graphic novels, anime, manga, video games, toys, movies, television, and more. One of the most original and inventive writers in the comics medium, Grant Morrison, will be a guest of honor at this year's New York Comic Con. Everything goes full circle, where he will meet and greet his many loyal fans. Grant is writer of such books as We Three, Doom Patrol, Animal Man, Batman, New X-Men, and All-Star Superman, and is working on DC's big event for 2008, Final Crisis. New York Comic Con gives attendees access to top entertainment industry talent, panels, and autograph sessions, as well as sneak peeks at upcoming television shows and motion pictures. Additional featured guests have been announced, including Charlie Adward, Terry Brooks, Duncan Fogredo, also mentioned in this episode, Irwin Hazen, Tony Moore, Steve Niles, Sean Phillips, Eric Powell, Rick Remender, Leonard Starr, Dave Shelton, and Chris Weston. And with dedicated professional hours, New York Comic Con provides an ideal business setting for the major players in the worlds of comics, film, and television. Further information can be found at www.newyorkcomiccon.com. We thank New York Comic Con for sponsoring the show. We hope to see you this year. May you stop on by Podcast Arena. It's coming. It's not too far away. But, speaking of which, what day is you going to be in New York Comic Con, Brian?
I'm sorry, what's that?
When are you going to be in New York Comic Con?
I think I'm going to be floating around. I didn't want to be tied down to a table. You know, I kind of realized that last year. I was kind of glad that I didn't have a table that I had to be at,
right,
because I was able to go to the Hellboy panel. I was able to go to the Top Cow panel, the
Hills Have Eyes 2 panel, the Masters of Horror panel.
Right.
I hit maybe 6 or 8 panels Friday and Saturday, and there's like no way I could have done that if I was sitting under a cryptographic banner the whole time.
See,
so
that's why you bring a friend. because that's exactly what I ended up going to many panels, mostly because there was always somebody there to watch the table. And this year I'm bringing a friend of mine who I basically said, I'm going to get you in for free if you promise to watch my table. So that's exactly what's going to happen.
You know, that just kind of feels weird for me because, I don't know.
But if
people go up to the cryptographic table, you know, they expect someone from cryptographic to be there.
Yeah, right.
Oh, yeah, you that guy from the podcast. He'll be back in a couple of hours, maybe. You know, so
I think what will end up minutes. Happening is the chance that I get to come up over there will end up probably getting a table and maybe get my Cat and Josh part of the time.
Yeah.
Buzz and Ken would most probably want to be there and destroy our banner or something.
I'm sure
they'll be up for it. So
yeah.
Once we get a chance that we both can be there, then we can both sort of go off and wander or whatever. So.
Yeah, and I mean, I expect to be at the table most of the time, but you know, if there is a panel that I want to go to, I'm definitely going to end up at it because that's part of the reason I'm there is also to report on the event. So that's you know, it might be the one few moments I'm not at the table or if I'm getting interviews elsewhere.
Because I wouldn't want to go over there myself and just sit at a table the whole time. So when I get back and my wife said, so what did you do? And I'll say, I sat at a desk.
So it was just like work.
Bucks.
We just spent $3,000 on airfare. So we sit at a desk.
Travel to the ash end of the earth to go sit behind a table.
But you're going to be there all 3 days, Brian, or just one of them?
Probably Friday and Saturday.
Okay, cool.
Actually working out all the gory details right now.
Nice.
And I'm actually going to be there on a press pass from comicmonsters.com.
Oh, sweet.
Where I do some journalism. You know, I do some con reports, and I do some reviews and other writing for Comic Monsters. So,
right.
And also, Big D comes on and gives his con reports for us as well. So,
nice.
Right. So I'll be covering the convention for Comic Monsters and Cryptographic. So you'll be able to either read the reports on comicmonster.com or listen to it at littlechamber.com/cryptographic.
Sweet.
But you can't hear me crying when you're actually reading this report. Just remember that.
And,
you bastard, you went with that.
I'll put a picture of Damien crying to make him feel better.
And if you need any you know, random like portable recording stuff while you're there, I'm gonna have all my shit with me, so you know I can always help you out if need be.
That's awesome.
Excellent.